The Boy from the Sea by Garrett Carr. Read by Stanley Townsend. Chapter 1. We were a hardy people, raised facing the Atlantic, a few thousand men, women and children clinging to the coast and trying to stay dry. Our town wasn't just a town, it was a logic and a fate. We knew there were more pleasant and forgiving places, we saw them on television, but they seemed meek in comparison. Each evening, seagulls wheeled above returning trawlers and the sun sank fiery orange into the sea, giving us an understanding of our place on the round earth. We liked this feeling, we savoured it, but we didn't go on about it. Atlantic winds had whipped away our words until we learned to do without them. Although our town's situation was dramatic, it was no postcard, and we focused on practicalities. The presence of the sea might have invested some people with spirituality, but not us. We weren't given to spirituality. And if we had superstitious feelings, we stayed quiet about them. Donegal Bay was murky and yielded nothing easily. But we had two strong countermeasures. We knew what we wanted, and we knew how to work. Our ambitions were to pay off our mortgages, be a car's first owner, dig up the stones at the front and get a decent lawn down. Some of us, after dinner, spoke quietly of conservatories or getting an extension. We were willing to toil for these things, and toil was available in our town. We could get a berth and fish, or work in the processing plants, or drive the lorries taking our catches across the country and beyond. We were also working for our children. We all wanted a few acres close by to put them on when they were grown, although a site for a house was the least of what we passed to them. We'd watch them toughen, enjoying their slow discovery of the industrialized bay we had landed them into. We liked having big families, but there was always a chance one or two might turn out delicate, the sort who'd one day look up at us dismayed by the bleak outlook and the isolation, crying, "Do we have to live here?" We'd explain this was a unique, distinguished place, and hopefully they'd come around. But in truth, we shared something of their restlessness. We weren't actually sure we were living in the best way, or that this was the best place to be doing it. Perhaps achieving our goals would bring no real satisfaction, and so much toil would be the death of us. Deep down, we were hoping that our children might find their way to better lives. This psychology might explain the fuss, the almighty fuss, when the baby arrived. Any fresh baby represented possibility, but here was one with no parents, no history, a child who was entirely future. Deep yearnings were activated when he landed among us. Suddenly, somehow, there the baby was, in the arms of a man whose expression was blank. Like he himself was nothing, solely his role, carrier of the child. It was Mossy Shovlin. We all knew him. Usually he was sitting on the wall of the Diamond, the car park by the pier, and he wasn't the sort to bother anyone. He had walked up the shore path from where he lived with his parents and siblings, but today, somehow, he held a baby. A Friday morning, this was, an overcast, ugly sky with rain building. There was a strong smell of fish and damp nets. The pier was busy with clattering forklifts, and hundreds of seagulls were screeching from the roofs of our houses and shops. The baby wasn't crying, exactly, but making yelps and squirming, wrapped in an old towel and a woolly sweater. The sensible move would have been to take the baby to the clinic, but Mossy walked past the clinic and past the Garda station too. Women came out of the shop, stretched out their hands and said, "Give us that child here." Mossy brought the baby tight to him, bent forwards, and showed them his back until the women fell silent and followed him instead. Soon Mossy picked up more followers, children on their way to school, the not working men, and John Cotter, who was out buying the newspaper. Everyone was impressed with Mossy, his new sense of propriety, his dignity. By the time he was on the steep brain,